Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey guys, Willie Geist here with another episode of the Sunday Sit Down Podcast. My thanks as always for clicking and listening along. My guest this week really needs no introduction. Her name is Salma Hayek. You've known her and loved her probably since 1995 when she got her big break in the movie Desperado with Antonio Banderas. She had moved to Los Angeles 4 years before that from her home country of Mexico, where she was a star in a telenovela, but decided she wanted more. She wanted movies. She had to get to Hollywood, and she broke out pretty quickly. Of course, the crown jewel of her career was her Oscar nomination for Best Actress in the 2002 movie Frida, a film, as you will hear in our interview, which really she had to move mountains to get made. It took her 8 years, I think, to have that movie made because she was pushed back from the studio. She ended up having to raise the money for production herself. She had to go out and sell the movie and recruit a director and recruit all the co-stars and get everything in place, even helped to rewrite the script before she could get that movie made, and it really paid off, of course. Despite all her success, as you will hear her discuss, she fought for a very long time, and to some extent to this day, Latina stereotypes in Hollywood. Even as her career was growing and she was in successful movies, she found herself being offered the same kind of roles again and again. So she kind of just took control of things, became an executive producer, a director, so that she could get out there the kinds of stories she thought needed to be told. Her latest movie is called Magic Mike's Last Dance. Yeah, the Magic Mike franchise starring Channing Tatum this time puts a woman at the center of the story, and that woman is Salma Hayek. I just can't tell you how much fun she was to sit with for an hour. She's funny. She's incredibly smart. She's very wise. She's a mother. She's married to a French businessman. Her full name is Salma Hayek Pinault. She's lived a lot of life, got a lot of experience, got a lot to share, and man, she is just fun to talk to. So I hope you enjoy our conversation with Salma Hayek right now on the Sunday Sit Down Podcast. Salma, it's great to meet you. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, I'm very excited to be here.
I know you have a very important date with a soccer match, so we've got to get this moving.
Don't we?
I want to talk about Magic Mike, which is incredible, and there's some scenes in there that are going to just blow up and blow people's minds. But as we sit here right now, Puss in Boots is coming out.
Right.
You and Antonio back for another edition, I think 11 years later.
Yes.
How much fun has it been to get back together, not just to make the film, but to do press and to spend time with your old friend?
I spend time with that old friend, even when there are no movies in between. But we had so much fun in the first one. We did something really strange after the first Puss in Boots. We went on a world tour. It's the only time I've done something like that, where we did 735 interviews.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We were losing our minds. It was, I don't know, like a, it was really something. We had to endure, and we went through so many phases. You know, in between the traveling around and sitting with each other, talking about the same thing. He was reminding me yesterday that at some point in Italy, I just broke down and started sobbing, and I never cry. And I said, I'm just so exhausted. I don't think I can do it anymore. I'm hitting myself. And we were like, we have to say something different. How do we say something? We had to entertain ourselves. So this time around, I have to say that after that, Puss in Boots has a special bonding for us. I mean, we talked about all our life crises. We were together for so long, but we're friends.
Right.
For like 25 years.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe a little bit more. And we always wanted a second one. And we were always hoping for a second one. And sometimes we bicker in real life as Puss in Boots and Kitty Softpaws, And it's we love them. And so we thought it was never going to happen. And the day you least expect it, 11 years later, you get the call and it's happening. And, you know, start, you know, get in a recording studio and just be her again. And that was such a surprise.
And the first thing you said was, fewer interviews, please. I can't be sobbing on Italian television.
Please. No, that's never happening again. No, I'm too old for that. I couldn't endure all the traveling.
So it's been a little easier this time?
Oh, it's been. Okay. It's been amazing. Yeah. And I love the film and I'm very impressed with it. And I'm very proud to be a part of it because it pushes the bar. Remember when Shrek came, it was very innovating because the comedy was for the kids and for the adults at the same time. And so in this decade, this is the first film that comes out from that universe. And visually, the animation is incredible. It's very, very cool. But also, it does the same thing with the comedy, but takes it one step forward because it's very philosophical. And it talks about important things in life, difficult things in life, and about being a human being that the kids can take in one way, but then the adults can take it in a different way, and also the teenagers, which right now they're living in a world that it's full of challenges.
Yes. For them. We have something in common. We both have 15-year-old daughters, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
We just connected in a whole different level. Just now.
We'll talk. We'll talk.
Yes. And I have another one that was 15 at some point.
Yes.
Because I have four.
And it's a hard time to be 15 with social media and everything that goes on.
You know, you think as a working mother, you get them through like the first 7 years and then you're going to have more freedom. And then it's from 7 to 14, you say, oh, whoa, I didn't expect that. But, okay, you have to be there. I said, okay, but once they get older, no, at 15, you really have to be there for your kids. And you realize at some point, this is it. This is my job for the rest of my life and my priority for the rest of my life. And it makes me a better person, and they're my teachers. And I love it. But you're always afraid and worried. But at the same time, you understand that that's once you have children, it's part of your identity and it's part of your soul and your heart forever.
And almost physically, your attention turns toward that. What your career obsession and all the other goals just go.
It's a priority. That's it.
That's it. Yeah.
For the rest of your life, that's the priority.
Are you having the same feeling that we're having, which is with a 15-year-old, you start doing the math and you say, in 2 or 3 years, they're going to go to college or they're going to go out to a career and they're going to be out the door. And that's that. Have you dealt with that yet or are we not going?
Yes, okay. Yes, because she's my last one. She's the little one. So I've already gone through it, and it's different with the boys and with the girls.
Yes.
Funny enough, my older girl, Mathilde, she got closer, and the boys become more independent. But maybe everybody's different. We will have to see with the years. But this is the last one, and it's terrifying. It's terrifying.
But in a strange way, for me anyway, it makes you value every moment with them. And to not waste one.
Yes.
Or to not go somewhere that takes you away for them. All of that.
I'm with you. You're like, you know. And also it makes you feel like the pressure of, I have to teach them all the whatever wisdom I've learned in my life. And they're not that interested at this stage. They're so independent.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, I have just a couple of years to, but because I have the other ones, it's okay, relax.
Yeah.
They stay with you. They.
Okay.
And I also, I really work hard at being fun, try to be fun or interesting in some way for them. You start molding yourself because you want them to come back and you want them to want to spend time with you. So you start molding yourself like I did when I was very young with the boyfriends. You mold yourself. You know, when you're really young, if they're into this, you get into that. And then you become more strong as a woman. And it's like, no, this is who I am. And, you know, we share things, but this is my personality. But I'm going back to that. What are they listening to? Let me listen to this music. I don't like it. Okay, you gotta like listen a lot because you're gonna like it eventually, you know? Listen to the words. Oh my God, why are they saying that? You know? And you just wanna stay current because it's very easy to say as a parent, I did my best. Mm. But the question is, did you push the limit in your best? Did you try to be better so that your best was better? Because it's too easy to say, I just did my best.
Mm. Very wise. And I have to believe you're a cool mom. They're going to come back to you.
I try to be. No, they come back.
You're cool.
But yeah. I panic. Sorry.
I know. I feel the same way. You want to attract them back to you. It's almost like you're flirting with
your own
children.
Yes, yes,
what can I do to make you come home?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. And I do things like, I hope they miss me. This is probably very toxic, the way I'm like helicopter mother, but you know, it's like the decorations for Christmas, you know, Valentine's Day, so that when they go, they miss, something's missing, and I'm somewhere behind the cooking. I still cook for them whenever I, and it's hard to be a working parent.
Yes.
Which we are all nowadays. It's very hard not to be a working parent, you know?
Yeah.
But it's hard.
Well, I could talk to you about parenting all day.
Let's move on.
Let's talk about Magic Mike.
Let's talk about Magic
My
Mike.
My gosh. People are going to love this film. They're going to love you in this film in particular. There are a few scenes in there that are unforgettable, I would say. What first attracted you to this franchise, to this Magic Mike? What did you know about it beforehand, and why did you want to play this part?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Steven Soderbergh. So it was a dream, and I was very honored that he called me in. And also, I love film and everything about it. So when I go to the set, it's not just about acting. I'm interested in everyone's job. I've gone friend with the whole crew. We talk about technical things, and Steven is brilliant. And just to be in a set and just watch him, because he's like an octopus. He's lighting, shooting, directing, sometimes writing, editing, and I love him because I love editing, and he invited me many times to the editing room, and I learned some. I'm fascinated by it. I love every aspect of filmmaking. And so it was a dream to work with him, and we became really good friends. I absolutely adore him. We had so much fun. Then the character was great. Usually in the Magic Mikes, the guys, it's for the woman, but they're not, the female characters could have been a little bit more part of the stories, in my taste. I'm sorry. I love you guys, but I told it to your face already. And they know it. And that's why they made a big effort with this one to make a strong female character. And I love Maxandra. Crazy Maxandra. It's amazing. And I identify with some things in her and stuff. And then I discovered Channing, and I discovered Reed, the writer. And we had just a lovely time. But the attraction, the first attraction, was the director and the character, and Channing.
I can, for people, a little look behind the curtain, I can tell that you have an eye for all of it. Even sitting down here,
I love it. You
have a good sense for where the cameras and the lights,
and
a little
I
directing.
Like it.
Yeah, and you like
and
it.
And I like it.
Yeah.
And Steven welcomed that. He loved that.
And to sit in the editing room, that's very rare, is not, for a director to invite you in?
It's very rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very rare. He is the director and the editor at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, watching the pieces of it that we watched, you see that this really is about your character. Of course, Channing Tatum, he's Mike, but the story is told through your character, and it sounds like that was a conscious thing, that this is going to be different than the previous two in that
way.
You
know what else was very meaningful to me? I was heard. All these guys wanted to hear the point of view of the woman, respected it. I felt respected and seen and heard. And it was very interesting to hear their perspective, you know, Channing's, Steven and Reed, the writer, on what they think women want. And each one of them had a completely different, but they were all feminist in some ways, or at least an attempt. These are guys that want women to be strong and want women to be free. But it was very interesting because some of them were a little bit more avant-garde than me. I was like, what? It was a great experiment. The process of it was very interesting. And you know, at the end of the day, no matter what you do, the result is there, comes and goes. What you learn in the process, how your life and your work fits you as a human being in the process, the relationships you make in the process, how you grow through the process, that nobody can take away from you. And that stays with you forever. The movies come and go, they forget. The experience of making the movie and what you make of it, that's a real gift.
It's so interesting to hear you say that because other actors I've talked to at your level say the same thing. At this point, I want a great experience. I want a great script or a director or people who I think might be interesting to work with or get to know. Is that where you are in your career where you look and say, is this worth me leaving my beautiful daughter for a little while to go do this project with this group of people?
Oh, no, they showed it where I live. I've never left my family for more than 2 weeks.
Is that right?
I've managed to have a career with...
Wow.
Yeah, I only do... Sometimes I do small parts because of that. I only shoot if I won't do it. I don't do it.
And that's all family?
It's all family. And I've also done movies that I thought it was going to be okay because I was leaving only 2 weeks. And then I see situations in my family where I pulled out. My priorities are very clear, and I'm very happy. It's not a real sacrifice. It might seem like a sacrifice, but is it really?
You've got your priorities straight.
Yes,
but I imagine as a younger actress, that had to be difficult to feel the power to say, I'm not going to go do that because
well,
of my
difference,
family.
Well, the difference, Willie, is that I didn't have children, and I didn't find my soulmate until I was, late in,
right.
in my game.
Right.
So I had the time to learn all the things that I had to learn and to prioritize me, my career, my evolution, always my family, though. My parents, my brother. I've always been a family. For me, it's very important, family. And your family that you choose, that you make in life, too. And my family of animals.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with them. They're my family, too. So,
how's the owl, by the way?
Oh, the owl is amazing.
Good? Okay, good.
Yes, the owl is amazing. But I did that. I did all that. And then I think sometimes it's really scary not to find the right man when you're younger. We worry too much. It's a lot scarier to find the wrong guy and settle for it than to find the right one later. And when you are more mature and you get out of the system a lot of things and you focus on yourself, you are a better candidate for a good marriage, I think.
Take some patience, some trust in yourself.
Yeah.
That you're doing the right thing.
And learning yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I have to ask you about the dancing in the film.
Please.
Because my goodness, can you move? I mean, there's a couple scenes in there that are just amazing. So did you have to rehearse and practice and train, or is that just innate ability?
No, it's technically complicated because it's very physical. You have to be very accurate and you have to make it look like you're not participating in a way. Like it's just happening and somebody else is moving you.
Right.
But you cannot mess up because there was one time where I made one little mistake and he almost dropped me on my head upside down. But he caught me, you know, because I was supposed to do something with my legs. And so the thing is, I didn't know I could move like that. It's been a long time since From Dusk Till Dawn, you know? And I'm 56. And then I felt really proud that I can still move like that and be all sensuous and be technical and dance. And it's a different kind of dance. I've never imagined I was gonna do, but also it was very empowering because usually I was dancing for a man, you know, like in From Dusk Till Dawn, and also in Dogma, I'm a stripper. Usually I get that part. Now somebody has to dance for me. I don't have to do that part, but I realized I had to do another part that it was very technical and I was not expecting it. I was terrified.
You pulled it off, though. I mean, it's truly acrobatic. We're not talking about the salsa. We're talking about all kinds of things happening.
And also, you have to overcome embarrassment. It's kind of embarrassing, the situation, because it's so intimate and you're moving and it's... I had to overcome, even with the actor, you have to overcome, you have to be very brave and really set yourself free and say, I'm going for it. But I did ask my kids for permission.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you explain to them what was going on?
Yeah. And Valentina said to me, as long as you don't do this move and this move, because that's very cheesy. And then I was telling the choreographers, I'm not going to be doing this one, because she was more embarrassed of the cheesiness.
Right.
They're very cool, my kids.
But have they seen the film or the footage of it? They've seen the trailer, maybe.
But she came to set. You know, some of them came. My husband came to set a lot.
Yeah, it's amazing. You really pulled it off, truly. That takes some trust with Channing, too, I would think, right?
A lot, but he was amazing. You know, Channing is a really good actor. He's a really good actor. I really enjoy working with him. And there's a lot of improvisation. And I trusted him, and he's a gentleman, and he's very thoughtful, and also the I really bonded with the choreographer, who's a woman, and that made me feel very safe. Mm. We were very close, and it felt safe and comfortable, and I felt protected.
You mentioned your parents a minute ago. I'm fascinated by how this all started for you, how you were in Veracruz, Mexico, dreaming of being a star at a very young age. When did that idea start for you? What even put that idea in your head that performance of some kind was where your life might go?
This question I get a lot, of course, but I think I'm in a place in my life where I can answer it very differently, because I discovered I was so confused. I saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, okay? And this is what changed everything for me. What I saw was a universe where everything was possible. The universe of film, everything is possible. You can have many lives. You can be many people. A river can be made out of chocolate. Everything. You can go to the moon, you can go to the past, you can go to the future. You can become a painting. Everything can happen. And I became in love and fascinated with this concept. And that's what made me become an actress. The thing is, if you think about it, it has nothing to do with performing. What attracted me was film. I'm in love with film. I guess that from my generation and from my possibilities, it was already an impossible idea to become an actress. It couldn't cross my mind that maybe what I wanted to do was direct or produce or write. Already being an actress was such a long shot. I didn't understand that's not what I wanted. I don't think I want to be an actress. I just want to be a part of that world. Mm. And because there were no role models, it was impossible even to think it and to understand it. What is it that I wanted? Now it's a different world. And when I think back about what made me want to be an actress, it was not another actress. It was not a performer. Yes, the part that you get to be many different people. But I was in love with a lot more than that. I still am. But I learned to enjoy it from an actor's point of view, to be in that world and to interact with the directors. But if I really think about it, maybe I wanted to be a director.
Wow.
And I'm only saying this because I hope it encourages other people to really think that it seems like what they want is something because that might be in the possibility of the reach or in their acceptance of a dream. Because sometimes it's hard to accept that you can do more. It's very scary. Because what if you don't accomplish it? But I really encourage young people to really be very self-aware of the nuances and the little things in your thoughts and in your feelings to try to understand what it is that you really want in life, because sometimes it's scary to see it.
Mm. And maybe you wanted to be the person who creates the fantasy world rather than performs inside of it.
But now I produce and
I'm happy.
Yeah.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Sunday Sit Down podcast. Stick around to hear more from Salma Hayek right after the break.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back. Now more of my conversation with Salma Hayek.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people realize as well as they think they know you that you went to school in Louisiana when you were 12, graduated high school when you were 15 years old. You're like this whiz kid. And then at some point, you were thinking about being a diplomat.
I studied political science and international relationships. Yeah.
But then you said to
yourself, I was in college at 16. My father didn't let me go at 15, so I had to wait. And you know what else? You probably don't know about me. It's funny because I was just talking with my friends about it. I was drafted for the Olympics.
I didn't know that.
I was 9 years old. And I was living in my little town, and then I saw Nadia Comaneci. I didn't know that sport existed, and I self-taught. And then my father took me, because I begged, to Mexico City for the summer. My vacation was, put me in a gym 24/7, and all I want to do is gymnastics. And he found the best gym, and I was drafted from that gym.
Wow, at 9 years old?
At 9 years old.
And you just decided not to pursue it in the way that it needed to be
pursued? No. My father, I had to stay in Mexico City, like in a kind of like a boarding situation where they teach you school, but you train 6 hours and they, you know, overlook everything, what you eat, how you sleep, everything. I couldn't think of something more amazing to do than to do the gymnast. But my father decided for me that I wasn't going to have a childhood, and of course that they were going to take his child away at 9 and go live in another city. And he thought it was horrific, and it took me a long time to forgive him. I really resented that decision. I didn't want a childhood. Mm. I just wanted to do gymnastics. But it's also why I left my town, and maybe because of that drafting, I said, maybe I can do it. And also, a lot of strange things happen in my life that seem impossible. Take, for example, actually, everything in my life is not normal. Puss in Boots. Who's going to think after 11 years that they're going to do the movie again? Magic Mike. Who's going to think that at 56... I'm going to be doing this sexy movie, you know, where I'm the boss, you know, and I put up, it's really, who's going to think I'm going to find this amazing man that I found in my life, you know, nearly 17 years together and so in love. I wanted a lot of children and they told me I couldn't have children. And so I had a miracle child, but then I had four children, thanks to the fact that he had three. Everything in my life is kind of a miracle. But also they happen for the good and for the bad. I'm just not going to talk about the bad. But even the bad is really weird. It's like, what? But it makes you think that everything is possible.
But it can't be a coincidence. You've put yourself in the position for a lot of those things to happen.
It's just too many, yeah.
Right?
I went to the eye doctor because I can't see anything. And I have these contact lenses now, but because I have, I only see 20%. So they say, do the operation. I said, okay. But what is the risk? I said, oh, no, only one in 100,000 have a problem. The odds are not very bad. And I said, oh, no, thank you. Because the things that happen to me are like one in a million, and it happened to me. No, I'm wearing my glasses. Yeah.
Those odds were too good. You didn't want that.
The odds are very strange when it comes around my life.
So you've got this incredible childhood. I honestly didn't even know about that. I don't think most people do.
We're just talking about it.
And then you decide you're going to be an actress. And I think you said to your parents, this is my destiny. This is who I'm going to be. What was their reaction to that?
Well, my father said, first I said, I wanna be an actress. And my father said, absolutely not. And the way I convinced him is, I said to him, do you believe in destiny? And he said, yeah. And then I said, okay, I know with absolute certainty that this is my destiny. And I was like 19. And I said, I want to go to leave university and go to school and do that, to learn that. And my father was completely against, but he thought, she's 2-3 years ahead already. Okay, take a break, go see it, and then she's going to go back to school. Right. Because I was good. I was doing really well in school, and I liked it. I liked it. But I was distracted because I wanted this other thing. So my father thought, nice, going to go, get bored, go back. And that was it. I was right. It was my destiny. And they knew it.
And they supported it once they saw you were good at it, that you were loving it.
Well, once I became famous,
that'll help.
Then my father became crazy. Then he was all over me. You have to sign every autograph. You owe yourself to your audience. He became like completely on the other side, and he was annoying.
Like a stage dad?
He was like a stage dad. Yes, not my mom. My mom was like, I can't believe you're doing a telenovela. This is not good, you know. They are so cheesy. I never watched telenovelas. I never let you watch telenovelas. How can you be doing a telenovela? And my father was kind of excited. And then when it came out, he was so proud. So proud.
You had to show them, I'm good at this. I can do this.
Yes.
So you have success in the telenovela, then you decide it's time to move to L.A. What was that like for you? You spoke very little English. You talk about the accent you brought with you and all the challenges you had.
Really, I thought I spoke better English, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah, I thought my English was okay because I was coming to shop. And as a tourist, it's very different when you try to act in the language. But I was very naive.
Yeah.
It's part of what helped me. I was really naive.
So what were those early years in L.A. like for you? Was it frustrating, the auditioning and all the things?
Shocking, super. No, I just to realize that, oh, wait, how do you get an audition? Well, you need an agent. We didn't have agents in Mexico. Mm. Okay, how do you get an agent? You have to show some work. But how do you get the work? You have to get the agent. I was like, what? Okay, I need a driver's license. Okay, but then you have to have a car and drive to have a car to have a driver's license. But you cannot buy the car without the driver's license. And it just seemed like everything was so contradictory and complicated and didn't know where to start, where to begin, didn't know where do you start? Because in Mexico also, one of the things that helped me is that I was just spotted on the street for commercials. And then I was spotted on the street. I mean, I never had an agent. It just kind of came to me. And so I liked it, and then I started to study, and it just kind of, the second thing I did was that telenovela was like the number one. Mm-hmm. So I was an overnight success. here, after being super famous in my country, I started as an extra. And I guess what I can offer to the people that are listening to us is that one of the things to conquer is shame. People try to shame me and laugh at me for being an extra. Status is it's an interesting deceiver. It really has nothing to do with you. It only has to do with the perception of you by others. And it is a very dangerous trick that can deter you from happiness. So I had to be very courageous to take the shame and say, this is my dream. And I'm going to fight for my dream. You can laugh all you want. Because if I don't succeed, at least I know I did my best to try to succeed. But I'm not going to let the perception of others not make me go chase what I really want because of how they're going to judge me. Because I was an extra. And the press would, I'm not talking about my circle, I'm talking about I was the livestock in the press. And then I laughed at the end.
Laughing still.
I succeeded. But it took a lot of courage.
And the added layer of your having been a big success and a star there, and then suddenly none of that matters in LA.
That's the thing. But I'm glad. Because then you have to build it with truth. You have to earn it again with truth, because that was fast. And the thing is that why didn't I just stay doing telenovelas if I was successful? Because I never wanted to do telenovelas, I wanted to do film. So it was not about being famous. It was about being in that world of film. It's what helped a lot is having a passion for something. And I'm still passionate about film. But now I'm also passionate about TV.
Yeah.
Not at the time. My God, they're so...
I'm
addicted.
So similar now, right? The quality of TV
is
cinematic.
Yes.
So was Desperado, did that feel like the break to you? Like,
absolutely.
My life is changing?
Absolutely.
Yes.
But then I was naive again. Because I said, oh, my life is going to change forever. Okay, like in the telenovela, you know, I was like the biggest from nothing. But no, it was successful, but no, it was not enough. You have to get another one and another one and another one, and nobody wanted to give it to me.
Really? Even after the success of Desperado?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even after Fools Roshin, the next one was a success.
Yeah.
I was never in the studio lists. Every time I succeeded on something, they saw it as a fluke. I did not get hired for the good parts, still after I was nominated and I did Frida, that I did for myself. There was a predisposition and to an understanding in their heads that because I was Mexican and I had an accent, I did not belong in their circle. And I fought for the change. And again, I break the odds. The best time in my career is at 56, where not only they told me you will never succeed in this country, but also they gave me a timeline. If you don't do it by the time you're 30, you're useless. You're dispensable. Because you are pretty. And nobody wants you anymore as you get older. And so they kind of put a timeline, which they do a lot for women. So people say, what do you work? I work so hard, I'm always tired, I have to juggle so many things. You don't have to. I love it. And I'm living in a time that I fought for this time to exist. And I have something to say. Women in their 50s are not disposable. We have a lot of things that we can contribute with. And because of our experience, our voice is important. It's necessary. So I'm excited to be a middle-aged woman, and that it's the best time of my life.
Stick around for more of my conversation with Salma Hayek right after a quick break.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Welcome back now to the rest of my conversation with Salma Hayek.
It feels to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that fight that you decided to start really took off during Frida. The film was beautiful. You were nominated for an Oscar.
No.
But I just mean having to do it all yourself and to say, I have to change the conversation. I have to do this.
But the conversation didn't change. I was nominated, I did Frida, and they were still offering me the bimbo part. Mm. And I was completely disheartened. I once proved myself, and I still did not get... Again, the conversation did not change. But I knew what I did. I did something that was impossible. So that gives you a lot of strength and endurance. They still did not want to see me. When I was in my early 30s, I was the only woman in the entertainment business that was a successful producer in film and television, an actress, a director, and the first Hispanic woman that was nominated for an Oscar. Nobody talked about it, nobody noticed. Because I directed something also for Showtime that I was producing for them, and the guy there said, you're not a producer, you're a director. And he gave me this thing, and I won an Emmy for Best Director. And I was doing also as a producer of Glibetti. We won everything. Nobody noticed. No American. There was not a woman that was an American woman that was doing all of that at the same time. For example, Jodie Foster was directing, and she was acting. And by the way, I love her. And she was part of my inspiration. But she was not television, cinema, acting, producing, directing. Nobody noticed. Nobody talked about the fact that finally a Latin woman was nominated for an Oscar as Best Actress, because there had been in supporting actress, but not Best Actress category.
Right. Well, the reason I raised Frida is because of everything you just said, which is that all these obstacles were placed in your way. I think people thought maybe that would scare you off and maybe this goes away. They didn't see you in the right way, Miramax and everything else. And yet you cleared all these hurdles that were meant to stop you. You said, I have to make this. You were on a mission this film, weren't you?
Yes.
And so how did you get around everything that was put in your way?
I'm clever. I would find a different solution for each problem. I'm a good problem solver.
I can tell.
I would have been a good diplomat. No, not a good diplomat. Actually, maybe not a good diplomat. But I do have, I use creativity to solve problems. And I have a sport, I hate to do things that have been done or do them the way that someone else did it. And that makes life really difficult, but really interesting and exciting. And you have to be an artist to be able to do that. And I suffer it, and deep inside I love it. I love to solve the puzzle and find a perspective and the angle that nobody saw before. It excites me. For example, for Ugly Betty, they rejected it. Everybody, nobody even wanted it. And so normally they say, no, you look for another one. And this one I just knew. Learning how to listen to your instincts is really a great superpower. So, you know what I did? I went to the advertisers with a file like this of research. And I said, there is a consumer that you can target that has a very strong force of buying. How do you say?
Purchasing power.
Yeah. Purchasing power.
Yeah.
And I showed them the numbers. And I said, would you advertise on a show that would be a crossover and will bring that huge audience and also crossover to the American? Here is the script. This is why. It's something that they know that they're familiar when they see it in English. They're going to feel acknowledged. They're going to see it again to see what is the difference. They're going to feel proud that the Americans are discovering something that... I explained the whole theory, and that's how I got it on the air. I went back to the network, and I said, I've already pre-sold your advertising. And they said, what? Nobody tried that before. And then they didn't... The advertiser said... Not only I would advertise because it was an agency that represent different advertisers, and it's like the bridge between the network and all the... So I went to the agency, not to one advertiser. And they said, we'll pay for the whole show. We'll produce it. And when I went back to the network and they saw that, they said, okay, no, we'll do it. We don't need that. And then we'll sell it ourselves. How dare you go sell? You don't work for me that way. But he was kind of interested in how I, you know, got it on the air, and that's how I got it on the air. Otherwise, they would develop, but not put things on the air that had Latino content. That was the first one.
You're persistent, no question about it.
And ingenious.
It. Yes.
Because you asked me, how do you solve the problems?
Yeah.
It's not about finding the answers; it's about finding the right questions.
You're often talked about as a trailblazer, as an actress, but just listening to you now, it's so much more than that. I mean, as a producer, as a director, changing the conversation. Have you stopped to appreciate how you have changed Hollywood just through your hard work and your force of will and your creativity and problem solving?
No.
You definitely have.
No, you don't stop. You don't stop. That's when you get old.
I don't mean you stop doing it, but do you appreciate what you've done?
It's a very interesting question. In some ways, and there's a lot of wonderful people who remind me of it, strangers, you know. But I feel there's a saying in Spanish, you don't sit, no te sientas en tus laureles, like you cannot be vain. You cannot. That's the death of creativity. When you sit and observe, you have to acknowledge it and then immediately say, what have I learned and how can I grow? And you have to keep to stay productive as an actor, as an artist, and I see business also as an art. And you have to stay kind of humble and in the moment Otherwise, you repeat yourself, and the hunger has to come from pushing the neural nets into making new connections mm-hmm. and not repeating. That's why I said that's when you get old. And you see, I see it on people that they start talking about only about the things they did because they're such great accomplishments. But they don't continue to get fed, you know, by new stimulations that keeps you curious, you know, and with a sense of humor and with hunger to discover new things. And it's very dangerous when you are in a comfortable place in life and you can relax. But, for example, my children keep me hungry. I can't settle. It's very easy. It's when you're hungry or when you have a need, you need to pay the rent, you come up with more things. Now the challenge is, where do you find that, you know? Because you don't have that hunger. But you have to stay grateful and hunger for life, but not grateful and static. Oh my God, am I making any sense?
No, totally, of course. How do you keep the hunger when you've achieved all the things that you hungered for? Where do you keep finding that motivation?
What's your contribution?
Yeah.
What's my contribution now? Oh, I did that. Okay, what's my contribution now? It's not like, okay, I did that. I get great contribution to the world. No. What's my contribution? What's my contribution to myself? What's my contribution? You have to, if you love life and you appreciate it, make yourself useful.
Isn't it amazing that the little girl in Mexico who was watching Willy Wonka dreaming of all this is now doing it? You're doing the thing you dreamed about doing, or maybe didn't even know that you were dreaming about, which is creating these worlds as a producer, director, all those things that you're able to do now. You've come a long way.
Yeah, they are really beautiful moments that surprise me. Not because of something grand happened, but I remember playing cards recently with my mother and my aunt who came to visit me in my kitchen. My daughter came to negotiate because she wanted something that I had said no. I had the cat in my lap, the two dogs next to me. There were these beautiful flowers that somebody sent me. And for a moment, everything stopped. Everything stopped. I looked at the flowers, looked at my house. I felt my dogs, my cat. I looked at my mom, I looked at my aunt, I heard my teenager negotiating. Everything stopped. Like I was observing that and I just felt so overwhelmed with happiness and gratitude. And those, I really was looking in the flowers, the dogs, and I was so grateful. It was just a normal moment. But that sensation is amazing. And how do you never lose it? I just came from Kelly and Anmar. I love them. I've been going to that show for so many years. They've been so supportive of my career. I know everybody in the show. Everybody. Because she's kept the same people. All the producers, the people that work in the camera. And I felt at home. I was so grateful to be there, back there, for so many years. It doesn't feel like, oh, I'm going to go do a job. Oh, I'm going to go see my friends. Right. It feels like that to me. Because I talked to the camera. I was so happy to see them. It was all decorated with the Christmas stuff. And I had my team with me that I love them. And I just felt so happy to be there, to have a movie that is a beautiful movie to promote and to be at Christmas with my friends and we get to chat. I meet a new friend, but it's been a long time I've been doing this. I keep going to the same places. And those are the moments that are important more than have I stopped and done this and done that. I feel them in those moments without obsessing about the more flashy part because it's not as delicious as the little human aspects around it, to me, at least.
That's beautifully said. Hopefully we've started a new tradition. We'll do 754 interviews together, just like you did for that first Puss in Boots movie.
To.
We'll do it.
I would love to.
Such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you for listening.
My big thanks to Salma for what really was a great and fun conversation. You can check out Magic Mike's Last Dance starting February 10th. And my thanks to all of you for listening. If you want to hear more of my conversations with our guests every week, be sure to click follow so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to tune in to Sunday Today every weekend on NBC. I'm Willie Geist. We'll see you right back here next week on the Sunday Sit Down Podcast.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.